I'm really discuss would like to discuss life lessons. You know, I'm a young guy. I've been through a lot, and my thing is always having learning experiences and sharing it with other people, and maybe to help somebody. If it helped one person, I'm good. If it helped more than that, then I'm more than good. But my thing is, I grew up in Newark and in the inner city. I know my way around, and maybe I can help somebody that's having troubles or getting down. I'm recovered from a stroke, so not even a stroke stopped me. So I know some of the life lessons that I offer, people will find them to be very helpful. So thank you. Actually, I'm adding to the introduction part of the podcast. I think this will help somebody out there. This particular subject I want to talk about is that I'm a recovering cocaine addict. 28 years clean, cold turkey, no programs, no nothing. And I just want to always encourage somebody, because it's possible. It's always possible to overcome something. But if you never started, you don't have to worry about it. But if you started, there's always a chance. You must give yourself a second chance. And a lot of people don't do that. But I gave myself a second chance. And not only did I have drug addiction to deal with, I had unemployment, homeless, and a couple of other things that I was dealing with at the same time. But I was determined to get out of that life. I'm really a street person. I come from the streets. Every day was Friday when you get high. And I know most people that have experience in recovery right now, because you got an opioid, Percocet and OxyContin problem going on, and it's become pretty tough for some people. But I'm just here to say that it's always possible. 28 years clean, I decided that I'm gonna start a podcast and help people with information that I could provide for them. You have to get at least 1 year behind you. And once you get 1 year behind you, you have to get used to not living life. It's a whole new thing. It's a whole new life. And nobody really can help you unless you're tired. If you're not tired, you can get all the love and support you want. It's not going to matter. You have to get sick and tired of getting sick and tired, and want more for yourself, and want to see yourself clean. You can't do it for anyone. You can't do it for mother. You can't do it for your father. You can't do it for children. You can't do it for brothers. You have to do it for yourself. I hope I resonate with some people that's listening to this podcast. I remember the time when I first, my first experience, my first time ever using drugs was, I was at a kitchen table, and a friend of mine had a $20 piece. And so he said, "You want to try this?" I said, "No, I don't want to try it. I'm not into drugs." But I tried it anyway, and it left a feeling of euphoria, and that was trouble. I knew it was trouble. 2 days later, I decided to go out and find somebody who was selling it, so I bought my own, and it lasted a 20 piece. It lasted me a couple of days. I would sniff it a couple of days, and I noticed that the more and more I sniffed and I got high, the more and more I used, and I found myself with a very expensive habit. But then I also got into drug selling in order to keep a high going. And one thing you find out is that you can get high, and you can't get high on your own supply. And I did that, and I did many things to keep my high going. I was a working person. I was raising two kids. I had an apartment. I had I was it was as they call a functional addict. And one of the things that I really realized is that even though I was functioning, I didn't realize that I was becoming an addict, and I was in total denial. But what made me realize that I was an addict, the amount of money, and I couldn't wait till the weekends come. And I became like this weekend recreational get high person. Then I would try on during the week. Then I would get high at work. I would get high when I got out of work. And I began to not being able to function unless I got high. So my fight with this was a hard fight. And I never said before that my father was an intravenous drug user, and I vowed that I wouldn't use drugs. But I end up in my 20s using drugs anyway. I used drugs for maybe about 7 years, and once I left this particular neighborhood, I was clean ever since, and I'm pretty proud of myself. But it was a struggle. I tried like 1,000, maybe 1,000 times to try to stop. I vowed not to get high, but I was start an argument with my lady to give me a reason to go get high. I mean, it was really, really silly of me, but I was better than that, and I'm kind of proud of myself that I was able to find my way out. And I know if I would have stayed, eventually I had to separate from my daughters. I was raising them, and I was doing a great job. I was a great job as a father, great job as a man. But I found myself, as long as I was staying with this particular female and the mother of my children, I couldn't get myself clean, so I had to get away. So I moved across town, and I went to stay at my mother. And I can tell anybody it's very, very difficult, because it calls you. The drugs actually call your name. And my first test is when I got my first job, because I moved away from the community and I wasn't employed. But once I got a job, I had money. So my first test was it. But then I realized all I had lost. It was very, very difficult that first year, because he kept calling me, and I kept saying, one time I actually went out and was thinking about it, but on my way to buy drugs, I stopped and said, "You know what? I think you must place yourself in a challenge." So what I did was, I turned back around and I went back, because I was staying with my mother at the time. I went back and I got something to eat, and I went to bed, and I woke up, and I felt so much better that I defeated. But it was every day I had to do this. But I got 1 year behind me. Once I got 1 year behind me, I got 2 years behind me, I got 3 years behind me, and then five, and then 10, and then 15. And then once I got to the 10 and the 15th year, it was like I never ever was involved with drugs. But it wasn't really the drugs that was the problem. It was a problem with me, because it wasn't easy to persuade me. It wasn't easy to make me do anything. That wasn't my problem. My problem was the way it was making me feel. I was looking for something to make me feel good, but it was all artificial. But once I realized that I needed to feel good without it, and eliminate the artificial feeling that I was getting, it kind of helped me the rest of the way. So now I sit here, I'm 28 years old. No, I'm not 28 years old. It took me 28 years to be clean. So I'm in my 20th year of being clean. And I know of somebody that I can help, but I'm saying that it's not easy. It's not easy, and you have to be mentally strong. But not only you have to be mentally strong, you have to want it. You have to really want to be clean. But you have to have a part of your life where you didn't use drugs. And I had that as a teenager. And I lost so much, man. I lost clothes. I was sung very well. And in my 20s, I threw my boxing career away, because I used to train. I was very good boxing, and I threw it away for drugs. I threw a lot away. I sacrificed family for drugs. I think about the things that I lost getting high, but then I think about all the gifts and talent. I was a good singer. I could box real good, and I sacrificed those careers to get high. So I just turned into a hardworking man. And I see it today, and I look back and I say, you know, with some of the information and some of the things that you've been through, you need to share. You need to share. Somebody need to hear this. And I remember one time, I sat when I was getting high. I sat in the park all night long. I used to go to the crack house and stay in the crack house for 2 and 3 days. And I knew I wasn't smoking no crack, but I always brung the coke. And I know when I ran out, they wanted me out. So I start to realize, I like, if you don't got no way of getting people high, people ain't gonna wanna have nothing to do with you. And then the danger, you put yourself in such so many dangerous situations. And I took pride in that growing up in the projects in Newark. That I but I was big on protecting myself and being able to defend myself. So here I am sitting up here as a cokehead, and I stayed paranoid. And I was like, why are you so paranoid? You wasn't always this paranoid. So I decided to say, no, this is not for me. And like I said, after the first year and after the fifth and the 10th year, I started to live like I never had a drug habit. And the relief, man, even when I got bored, and because I don't like the word bored and corny, and I don't like there's nothing to do. I don't like to hear things like that. Because my mother used to always tell me, there's always something you could do. There's no such thing of bored and you don't have nothing to do. Pick up a book, she used to tell me. So I was always a heavy reader. And, you know, I won't sit here and say that I'm some highly educated person but most of my education came from out of the school. It wasn't in school. And I look back at my life and I think about all the books that I read on my own, how I self-taught myself, how I was able to change my life around. Then I became a mentor to many people, but I was actually a mentor as I was going through my own problems. See, that's the strange thing about it. What helped me relate to other people was the fact that I was going through it myself, and you was able to understand what people was going through because you actually was going through it yourself. And by being that way, you were able to help more people. So I was a mentor while I was getting high, while I was doing drugs, and I became even more better of a mentor because I had the stories to tell. And this was a big thing because people who do get high, when you can understand what they're going through, you can relate to them more better. I think I saved a few strangers in my travels because I used to take the train. I used to work for the school system. I used to work for South Orange Maplewood school system. And all during this time, man, I was clean, but I ran into people who that was high. And I mean, one time a guy came up on me and he said, you know, you made me feel so bad. I was so tore up and high. And you sitting up there and you're a recovering addict and I'm bent over and hanging. And the effect that I had on him just by my presence and just by a little conversation before the train came had so much of a strong effect on this guy that he came back one day suited. And I saw him for that one time suited. And I never saw him again, but a year later, he was clean. And he said, can I tell you something? When I stopped getting high, the day I got a high in front of you and I felt funny. That's when I knew that I had a calling, if nothing else, but to help people get their life together for drugs. He said, because that day I was high around you, I felt very, very uncomfortable, very uncomfortable. And you never said a word. You never judged me. You know, most people, when they recover, fight their drug habits. They become very judgmental. And I promised myself I would never become judgmental because I was once one of those people. So what made me believe that I could become a mentor? Because you could be a mentor when you ain't judgmental. And being a mentor, you don't talk to people, you talk with them. You need to understand where they come from. And I had the ability to understand people. I always did. You know, I always was around guys who was older than me when I played sports or just times. I became like this young shoulder to lean on for older people. But anybody that I help, they don't know they help me. When I see them in the conditions that they're in, it kind of helped me stay focused. And as long as I was around people who stay focused, and I got my tests, as I relationships, I broke up with women. A lot of tests that I had that would have broke me would have led me back to getting high, But these things didn't lead me back to getting high. And if you met me today, you would say, "This guy never got high. What is this guy?" But when you hear me talk about the stories and the conversation, you knew there's no way that this guy could ever be able to discuss drugs or discuss the street life or discuss getting high. He couldn't tell those stories if he didn't actually do it himself. So I became believable. And being believable became a part of my mentoring. So when I used to mentor, I always mentored to strangers. But then I also didn't know the effect I had on people that I knew for years, And I find that a lot of people was watching me. You never know who watching. You never know who you teaching just by you carry yourself. And I had a very close friend of mine tell me, "I never knew you got high." And you never let yourself look down, or you never let your hair grow. You always stay clean shaved. You always stay clean. You always stay pretty well dressed. I never knew, but I told him that I was one of the worst drugs user around. I had a $300 a day habit. But what I told him was, I was one of the worst kind of junkies, because you have people that do drugs that you can see that they do drugs because the places they would be, I wouldn't frequent those places. And then I would go incognito. When a person, incognito means alone. You find a place to get high on your own. I was one of those kind of people that found a place to get high when nobody's around, which is worse because you end up doing more than what you should be doing because being that no one knows, you decide yourself that nobody know that I'm going to do this whole $100 worth of coke. So once I start doing getting high by myself, I found myself doing more drugs. I was rushed to the hospital one time with bad heart palpitations, and I said to myself, "I'm going to stop," but I didn't stop. It was one of those times that I would stop for a month and then I'd be right back at it. Then the next time I would stop for 2 months and I'd be right back at it. Then I would stop for half a year, and then if something would set me off, or I would, let's be honest, I would find a reason to get high. I always was tested, always was tested. But then I noticed the pattern. Then I noticed that. Then I woke up one day and realized that, you know what you're really doing? You're really just chasing the first high you ever had. That was the best high that I ever had, was the first high. So once I realized that all you're doing is, no matter if it's a year or 10 years later, 15 years later, 20 years later, you just realize that you're really just chasing the first time you ever got high. And once I got used to this trick and this mind altering thing, that all you're doing is chasing the first high. So if you get high after any number of times you get high after your first time, you're just chasing the first time. Nothing you do or no amount of drugs that you use will ever give you the high that the first time did. And once I realized that, it was like the card trick 52 pickup, where people take a whole deck of cards and throw them on the floor and you have to pick them up. So it was a trick to it. Then I said, "You know what? I don't like tricks. I'm tired of being tricked, and trick is damaging." And then I got an AIDS test, HIV test, and it came back negative. And the nurse scared me when I first went to get a HIV test. And the nurse scared me, and she said, "Mr. Montgomery, I need you to sit down." And the look on her face was very scared. So I was scared because I have your results, and you're negative." And she jumped up and said, "You're negative." And I said, "Don't you ever do that to me again. You scared me." She said, "No, I did that to you because are you interested in being a counselor, because from my questionnaire, because they always question you before they give you the test, from your questionnaire you was able to answer all the questions. You even gave me answers and questions that I didn't even know. And I'm a certified person that tests you. Do you ever interested in being a counselor? And I said no. But I was always talked to as a kid for being a counselor for things, a mentor for things. Mentoring I did naturally. I could do mentoring and you don't even have to pay me. Because I always wanted to see the people happy. I never liked to see people sad. When I was a kid, people used to always tease me, "Your mother gonna whoop your butt. You stop and you talk to that homeless man on the street. You feeding that homeless man and you stopping to talk to him. He's a nut." But what they failed to realize, the people they call a nut had damn good sense. And that's why all the things that I accumulated over the years, it start to benefit me. That's why whatever you experience, whatever you see, whatever relationships, whatever you read, whatever you go through, save the lessons, because one day you're gonna have to use them. And all the lessons that I accumulated over the years, I was the oldest of three boys, and all the lessons that I learned, I eventually had to use. But if you don't use them, and if you don't use them to solve problems, the problems will raise themselves up again until you get it right. So I begin to get it right. And now I sit here. I was on my job. I've been working for the board for 20 plus years. And now all this time that I was in the drug, like nothing happened to me. I'm clean. I live and eat healthy. I get a stroke on the job. So now not only do I know how to talk to people about a stroke, whatever I've done and I recovered from, it became a better mentor for me. It added to my mentoring. So now I talk to the young people about drugs. I talk to the young people about violence. And that's another story, because I was always in fights and always fighting other neighborhoods and communities. But right now I'm making this podcast based upon drug recovery, and I'm trying to share as far as that concern. And my thing is, and one of the things I always try to present myself when I present myself to people is to tell my stories so they know I understand, because some of the things that how you help people is not in no book. If you want people to trust you, you want people to confide in you, you have to let them understand, you have to make them understand that you've been there. And my being there helped me a lot. And I hope this podcast, this short podcast, I call it a short podcast because I have two daughters and a son. And I have a son, he turned 25 years old this week, and he was complaining about something. And I told him, "I don't know what you're complaining for." In my 20s alone, I had 20 to 30 different chapters that I could have wrote if I wrote a book. So right now it looks dark, but it's always light at the end of the tunnel. I said, "You're 25 years old. Do you know they had bets on me in the neighborhood that I wouldn't make it to 25?" And I'm 57. So their bets didn't pan out. I'm not a gambler, but I didn't know that. A friend came to me and said, "Two guys are betting on you. You won't make it to 25. You know, you got a chip on your shoulder. You got a short temper. You're a tough guy. I wasn't a bully, but I didn't take nothing from nobody. When you grow up in the projects, you don't have to be a bully. You just become one of those kind of people that everybody pick on until you put your foot in a couple of people behind. When you put your foot in a couple of people behind, you're able to maneuver. You're able to go to store and bring back your mother change. You're able to keep your lunch money in school. You're able to do a lot of things when you're able to defend yourself. Yeah, I didn't want to learn how to box. I didn't want to learn how to fight, but it was very vital in the neighborhood that I grew up in. So all those kids, you have kids in the inner city, and you have kids in the suburbs. I always worked my whole school career in the suburbs. But the point I'm trying to make is that it's a different fight for kids. I always had this dream, this wish that an inner city kid can experience the good and nice fluffiness of the suburban. And when I see suburban kids acting up, I wish they can get a taste of the inner city. That one can get a taste of the other one. And maybe it'll bring about change. It may not change everybody. You can't save everybody. Everybody's not gonna want to change. But always make it available. And that was my thing. Always make it available to them to change. If a person wanna change, have the things in place to bring about a change. If they don't want to change, you can't change them anyway. Because you can't change people. It has to be a part of what they want to do. You know, they have to be sick and tired of being sick and tired. If they just sick and tired, that's not enough. Sick and tired is not enough. They're going to return. But if they sick and tired of being sick and tired, then you got a chance. But if the bottom line is still based upon what the person. Responsibility of self is the most important thing to anything. You start with yourself. There's nothing wrong with a little, there's nothing wrong with thinking about yourself when it comes to saving your life. If you don't save your life, you can't save nobody else's. So you must find the ways to save your own life. And one of the things that I always tell people, some people can't stand to be alone. It's okay to be alone. If you don't learn how to be alone, you're not going to be so great in a crowd. There's going to be times where you're going to be alone. What you do when you're alone? You fall apart? No. You learn how to be alone. You put a system in place. Remember, I never went to a drug program. Everything I did was cold turkey. So most of my stuff was on the job training. Even being a father, even growing up being a father, I did the opposite of what my father didn't do. I did. That's how I became. And having my girls, having my children played a major role in turning my life around. I was headed to a prison. I was headed to a grave. I was headed to maybe even being murdered. But my investment in my family and my children superseded anything else. So I'm asking anybody, if you have anything positive going and you don't want to destroy it, take the positive route because negative routes is not guaranteed. Some people get high and they get high for the next 5 and 10 years, and some people get high for the first time and they die. It's too big of a risk, it's too big of a gamble. All I'm saying is, if you got the support, take advantage of those good supports that you have, because I grew up with people that didn't have a mother. I grew up with people that didn't have a father. I come from the neighborhood where most people growing up without a father. We come from single family homes. My mother was a hardworking woman. But the thing that I'm most proud of is that when my mother passed, I was a clean, upstanding citizen. A clean, adult, upstanding citizen when she passed. As a kid, my mother didn't see me that way because I stayed in stuff. I was in a lot of rough stuff, but her last years of her life, she saw me as a clean, upstanding, highly respectable. Even and it's imagine I couldn't even destroy the respect that people have for me using drugs. I was one of the worst drug dealers. I'm telling you, I had $300 a day. Coke sniffing habit, and I couldn't even destroy the respect that people have for me. And that helped because if I couldn't destroy the respect that people have for me, why shouldn't I have respect for myself? I always put it on the line. I always went to the edge, always did things that was detrimental, and I still couldn't destroy the respect that people have for me. So I'm making this podcast and I pray that it helps somebody. Thank you. I'm here to talk about today. It's a lot of talk about legalization of marijuana. Actually, I'm against it from being a former addict. I'm against it for many reasons. I've seen as innocent as people try to make marijuana being so innocent. I've seen a firsthand account. I mean, It's smoke, and it doesn't, you know, you ain't gonna go kill somebody if you smoke it. But I've seen the laziness that it do have, and the procrastination that it caused people to do when they smoke it. You know, so I understand, but now you have people talking about, okay, let's legalize it, let's make money off it, and forgetting that the damage that it do to people. You know, I'm dealing with one of my children at this time, you know, with this marijuana thing. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to get him to be stay focused. Sure, as a focused smoke, when you're smoking it, you talk all the stuff that you want to do, but it just so it has more detriment than it does benefit. So I'm against it. Second of all, I'm here to talk about you know, many people, you know, many people, and this is a great argument. I agree with them to a certain extent when they say to help people, you don't have to always go through what other people went through. You know, you don't have to get down and dirty with people to help them. No, you don't. But all I'm saying is most people can resonate and relate to people that have been through it before. And I mean, they can. They just can't. I'm not saying that the people that haven't been through anything can't help. No, they can help, but they can't do it. They have to do it from the heart. They can't be phony about it. You have a lot of people, they talk the talk and they pretty phony about it. I'm really talking about those people. Don't sleep on people because you find them the downgrade to other society. Trust me, they aware and they understand when people being real with them, and they understand when people not being real with them. So when you go to help them, you can't be phony. If you phony, they either gonna get over you or they're gonna reject your help. You know, or something could be wrong mentally with the person. So you have to do it like you care. You know, everybody forget that when you help people, it has to be love involved in it. People can tell when you're doing it for business reasons and you're doing it for to be popular. People can tell that. And people can also tell when you do it from the heart. But the thing about doing things from the heart, because you're talking to somebody that do mostly everything from the heart. You have to be careful too when you're doing it from the heart. So you have to be careful in all aspects of helping people. When you do it from the heart, you have people out here that really don't want help, but being that you doing it from the heart, they'll take advantage of you. Sure, you have to know those things too. So that's why I'm saying you have to be well aware of what you're dealing with, and everything, like I said, is not from a book. Professional training is important. You know, we all know that professional training is important, but sometimes it's not your professional training that help people. Your professional training help other professional people, but it doesn't help people that do not have professional training. What about the people that does not have professional training? So when I say do it out of love and do it out of help, and sure, you're not going to save everybody. But you should make yourself available to always help someone, you know. But the most important part is to make sure that you're together, you're honest, you're coming from a point of genuinely helping someone. Because if you don't come from that, if you don't come from that, people can tell that. People know phony. When and that's why I said, I don't attach my horse or I don't attach my train to every and anybody, because they say they want to help. Sometimes people help and they hurt in the situation. They only helping themselves. They're not helping the situation. Sometimes, most of the time, people they willing to help, but it's something in it for them. It's some money, some popularity, some reputation. It's always just help because it's from the heart. It's genuine. You want to help your fellow person. You know, we all connected. You know, no, we know no man is an island. So your contribution into helping someone doesn't take accolades all the time. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes you do more helping people by staying under the radar. You don't always have to be the one in the spotlight, you know, but you know, you have a lot of people, they do things and they put in the spotlight. But most of your help should be not noticed, not publicly aware that you help people. You know what I'm saying? So when you go into the community, people already kind of know that this guy always was a helper. This guy, whole life, he spent helping other people. Even if you help some, even if my mother always taught me, even when things ain't going right for you, always be willing to help somebody. Always be willing to help a person that genuinely need help. Some people try to play you out, try to dolphin you. We call it dolphin when somebody try to fool you or play games on you. We call it dolphin. That's a street term, dolphin. So I've been dolphin a lot in my life. So I'm aware of somebody's trying to get over, trying to be slick and all that. But my problem is, and my mistake has always been the money. I was famous for being the Monday morning quarterback. I was aware of what it takes to accomplish and win, and what it and always understand other people. But is oh, I'm my mistakes is that's why I'm caught up. I'm always caught up in some kind of jam that I always have to find myself fighting my way out of, is because this Monday morning quarterback thing that I'm stuck on. I'm aware after the fact. I knew going in what was the problem, possibility was, but my positive thinking, I'm always saying, well, I can change the situation, or people change. You got to give people a chance. You know, I got burnt a lot by that, but just getting burnt doesn't stop me, you know, from helping other people. What happens is I just have a guarded optimism. I'm just more smarter in the way I give my help. I don't try to attach to every situation. I don't try to jump on every bandwagon. You know what I'm saying? Because when you, my knees is already has scars on it from trying to jump from one bandwagon to another. So I do the best I can. I was always taught to always be available. If make yourself available to help somebody. If somebody genuinely want help, help them. You know, but my mother always taught me beggars can't be choosy. So when you find yourself in a situation of need, you must really, really, really need help in order to ask somebody for help. Other than that, you gain patience. You learn how to wait until you can help yourself. But in the meantime, if you always was taught to help yourself, those moments don't come up that often. You know, so I'm making this podcast. It started out, I'm not for legalization of marijuana, but it also mentioned in this podcast about being able to resonate and connect with people, and forget the myth that you gotta be a dolphin to help a dolphin. You gotta be an alcoholic to help an alcoholic. You gotta be a criminal to help a criminal. You gotta be a robber to help a robber. No, you don't have to be none of those things to help somebody. You just gotta be genuine. But if you come in phony, perpetrating a fraud, your help is not genuine. This is why people, it's not that people are so much lazy or not getting involved with making change. It's a trust issue. People been burnt so much that they don't trust. What I've learned in my life is, yes, I've been burnt quite often. You understand? But that doesn't stop me. It just make me more selective. I have to be more selective. I just can't spread my wings everywhere. I can't fly everywhere. So where I could fly, I fly. If I can't fly there, I don't get involved. If I'm not going to add to a situation, I'm definitely not going to subtract from a situation. So that's how I really weigh. I have to weigh it out with myself first before I get myself involved with things and get involved with people. I don't, you know, I check people out before I get close to them or get involved with a movement. You know what I'm saying? I'm not one of those people that's starving for attention or popularity. So I don't jump to every movement. This movement got spotlight on. Let me like be an ambulance chaser. I'm not an ambulance chaser. I'm not a person. I don't need attention like that. I'm not starving for attention like that in order to get involved. I want to get involved because I want to genuinely help somebody who's struggling. My brother, I have a brother who struggled with mental illness problems. So it's in my background to be a helper. My mother was a helper, so part of what who my mother was is in me. I'm cut from that cloth to always be a person to help. And when you live in certain environments in certain communities, when you're a person to help, sure you get burnt a lot. But does that stop you from helping people? No, it doesn't stop you from. Do it discourage you from helping people? What you realize is that you're not going to be able to help everybody. But make yourself available for those that is, because you never know who's watching you. You never know who you're helping. Your help may be the thing that changed people's life around. People that help me don't realize that one help. That one time helping me changed my life around. So if I can do that for somebody else, of course. You know that commercial that when a person sees somebody doing a good deed, then they go and do a good deed, and then somebody watch them do a good deed. You know, this is all off fantasy thinking, but it's a lot of possibility in all these things. I don't I'm not one of those negative. There's no good. Yes, it's good. It's good. Always been good versus evil. Evil wins because good sits on his hands. Don't sit on your hands. Get involved. Right now, I'm sitting here with a stroke, learning how to walk again, and it's frustrating. The frustrating part is that I can't do a lot of things that I want to do, for myself, and then I can't do a lot of things with helping other people. But trust me, that door is never closed. I never closed that door. I'm not shut down. I'm still breathing. I'm still living. My experience with the stroke, my near-death experience, have taught me a few things. So now, instead of always using my hand, I use my mind, which I always had a sharp mind. I was always a detriment to myself. That's why I don't blame. That's why I don't play the blame game. It's not other people's fault that did me in. I did myself in. They couldn't do me in if I wasn't allowed or wasn't available for them to do it. So I'm not angry with them. I have forgiveness in my heart, but I just don't play with people. You know, I'm just not one to play with people. I'm one of the funniest cats, one of the funniest dudes you ever want to be around. My personal relationships, the people in my personal relationship keeps me rolling, keep me in stitches laughing. And I also keep them in stitches laughing. So when you see me and you see me never smile, I'm always serious. Don't let that fool you, because I am one of the most funniest, loving people in the world once you get to know me. But I just don't go around. My mother didn't raise me to just go around and skin and grin at everybody and laugh and live in this utopia mentality. I'm just not one of those kind of people that have a utopia mentality. So I made this podcast, and this is one of a few that I have made, but it's something that was just on my mind. So I will call this podcast Life Lessons Learned and Sharing. Thank you. I'm sitting out here on a Sunday morning, just relaxing, listening to a little crime. But I was also looking at something on Facebook about the struggling in Alabama and the situation of some of our people. And it amazed me how I see some of our people who have made it. They brag about what they got and show off what they got, which, what good is that to the whole of people? I take, for instance, the homeless situation. I was watching this morning the situation in Puerto Rico and how they blotted out their faces. And I have a lot of respect for that, that they blotted out their faces, because I know that if you have nothing left, you at least should have your dignity intact. So blotting out their faces, I was very impressed by that. And I was thinking about the time when my brother, which was is legally paranoid schizophrenic, and he was going through one of his episodes after my mother's death.
and helping them. No, I was okay, but I felt, they asked me, aren't you ashamed? No, I was more hurt for my brother than I was for myself, because what he was allowing himself to come down to. So I moved with him, and he called me 3 or 4 times a day when I worked at Montclair State University. And I came down with him to assist him in my mother's old apartment, which we agreed to supplying him with, because he needed a place to stay. So I left my place on 560 Main Street. I moved out, and I moved in with him. And I remember being there with him. We started out pretty good, me and him. And he was receiving SSI. And I came there, I would pay the public service and the gas, but I didn't want to let him off the hook, so I had him be responsible for the food. For the first 2-3 months, he was doing good. He was going food shopping with his little money. He was able to keep his check. And I remember having experience in the past with me and my mother. We got my brother in this nice home. And the fact of the matter is, but he had to turn over his whole check. And my brother also later found out, my brother also was taking his medicine and getting high. So my experience with people that's mentally challenged and having addiction and so-called homeless, you know, I've been through it. So I stay away from those situations, because you're not helping them by always assisting them and feeding them and making sure they're okay, because what it does is it allows them to keep their whole check to get more high. And I found out the hard way, because I was paying one time, the public service bill was $80. So I gave my brother $80, go pay this public service bill. He said, I'm going to put 40 on it and keep 40. I said, why would you keep 40 when the bill is 80? I'm always been responsible. I try to pay my bills to the best. I mean, I pay my bills off. I don't have to pay my bills. So I asked him, why would he do that? No, I need $40 for myself. I said, it's just the third of the month. What did you mean you need $40 for yourself? Oh, I spent my money. I said, you spent your money on what? But you know, I'm from the streets. I'm not stupid. So he turned around. He told me that he spent it all. So I said, nah, matter of fact, I'll go pay it, because it needs the whole thing paid. Ain't no you $40 and $40 to the bill. That's what's wrong with you. You don't like rules and regulations, and you don't like to be responsible. But you also want somebody to help you. See, this is the reason why you got to be careful when you go to help people, because you may be hindering them instead of helping them. You may be prolonging the situation that they're in. You know, you thinking, you feeling sorry, oh, this is my brother, he's mentally, he's paranoid, schizophrenic. We done been to the hospital almost 100 times, back and forth to the hospital with him, with your mother when she was alive, and then he needs, always need assistance and everything. Sure, they need assistance, and they have these situations, but they also great manipulators, I found out. And it was like, you was teaching them to be a baby. You know, the medicine already had them infantile, but then they realized that, hey, I could run a scheme. All I got to do is pretend, or all I got to do is, even when I'm not in this state, is act like I'm getting ready to get in this state, and I get to keep a check, I get to get more high, and they'll feed me, they'll clothe me, they'll house me, because they'll be concerned. It was more like manipulating his family, my mother and myself. And I found out the hard way. So he was in the episode. He had an episode while I was staying with him. I used to bring food home with him when I come from work for both of us to eat. And one day he ate the food and went back outside and yelled out the window, come outside, I'll kick your ass. I said, I just fed you. I just fed you to eat. I don't care. Fuck that. And, you know, he started coming at me. So I caught my feelings, so I went after him. Then my nephew called me back and said, don't feed into it. And then I caught myself and said, why are you feeding into it? But what it was I made him be more responsible with paying the more. I left him with more responsibility paying the bills, and he actually got mad at me because I started out paying everything, but I didn't want him to be stuck having this whole check, so I want him to be responsible. I figured if I make him more responsible, take half the bills off my back, it'll make him be responsible with his check. No, it made him more angrier because I had already babied him. So I refuse to allow anyone to manipulate me out of the kindness of my heart. You know what I'm saying? You try to do what you can to help people. You know, my situation was straight, you know, but you felt more sorry for your brother than you did for yourself. So you think you help him, at the same time you're hindering them. That's why I'm not down for just helping anybody. You understand? I was always taught, I had learned the hard way. I always was willing to help from a kid, always willing to help the guy, the homeless, the person without address, person on the corner. I was always young, always feeding them and helping them along and feeling sorry for them. But I discovered some of them, you're more hindering them than you are helping them. So once I realized that I'm hindering or I'm helping them, once you help them and you see them helping themselves, it's more of a blessing. But when you start helping them and they just get relaxed and get more into the lifestyle that they done discovered, that gets them more, it doesn't pay to be pitiful. I was always taught, try not to help. If it's children, that's a whole different story. But try not to help adults, because it's a lot of manipulation to what they do too. I'm not saying all their case. Some of them don't understand what they're doing. But I used to go with my brother Farouk to deliver medicine. He used to deliver medicines, and he delivered medicines to rooming houses. And one of the females, she was in a bad way, I thought. And the men was in a bad way also. But he used to always give her $2 every day we would go there. But this time he gave the $2 to a guy. Don't you know she got mad at him? Regardless of her mental state, she still got angry with him because she didn't receive the $2 this day. Mostly from Monday through Friday, every day of the week he would give her the $2. But this particular time, a guy beat her to it. He saw him first, so he gave her him $2, and she got angry. She cleared up. She wasn't no longer mental. She got angry with him. And I was like, wow, that's serious. So when I go to help people, man, I hope when I go to help them, because that is my duty is as a Muslim and as a human being, is to help your fellow man. But I'm noticing this trend of manipulation more so than helping them. If you see them helping themselves, you please, you know what I'm saying? Because you want to help the person. You know they have to eat, you know they have to be clothing. I used to have to fight my brother to come home to his apartment to take a shower. He wouldn't take a shower for a month or so. So I used to have to fight with him to get him in the shower. If he wanted something from me, I used to have to play a game. If you want something from me, you got to take a shower. He would take a shower, and then I would give it to him. But at times, he will fight and fuss and pick cigarette butts out the garbage. He would do things and sleep in front of the stores. He had a place. It was winter time. It used to be snowing. And he had a place of warmth with lights, with food, and shelter. And he would choose to stay in front of And I used to argue with him. And I used to say, no, I can't continue to argue with him. But I later found out the reason why he was having a situation, because he would take his check and get high. And then when he run out of money, it depresses him. And then he go back into that state. But as long as he had money, he would, it began to bother me. It really began to bother me, began to question. I began to question myself, where as I'm going with this, until one day my cousin called me, because somebody called her, that my brother had took a garbage can and shattered all the management in our property, in the property where the apartment was, window. So I knew that was an automatic eviction. They already had like 220, maybe 30 complaints. I mean, serious complaints worth being evicted for. And she was giving them chance by chance by chance. But I know that her throwing the garbage can through her office window knew that that's it. So what I did was I went searching. I found the place. I went and got my own apartment because he was being evicted. Him and my nephew was being evicted. I'm not mentioning my nephew in so much because he's still young, but he's still responsible. And I didn't take heed to what my mother taught me. My mother told me before she died, because I attended her. I took care of her while she was struggling and while she was sick with the cancer. So I was by her side in the hospital, at home, cooking for her, doing everything I could as a son for her. And she told me when she passed away, don't help them. Don't help him. He can help himself. I done ran with him. Me and you both done ran with him over 20, almost 30 years with him. You know, and for my brother to finally make change, I had to get a police officer. And the police officer said the only way, if he hurt himself or hurt you and don't know the president of the United States, don't know his name, don't know Social Security, we can't hold him any longer. So he said, I have a trick for you. Take a knife out the drawer and say your brother tried to attack you. I had to go through a tactic like that to get him committed in a university hospital and then face an arbitrator, which is a judge at that time, an arbitrator, and he had a representative to get him committed. He was committed for 8 months, and after the 8 months, today, years done went by. He's doing a lot better. He's not having episode. But I really believe that he knows that my mother's no longer living. And he knows I'm done. I done had a stroke now. I done had a stroke on my job. So I can't help nobody. He knows now he can't help nobody. So he's keeping himself together. And I'm beginning to wonder that, are you really helping? My whole reason for this podcast is, are you really helping people that consider themselves don't have no place to stay, don't have nothing to eat? Are you really helping them? Are you really hindering them? Because I watch some of them. They want you to provide their food. They want you to provide free housing. They can't stay in housing because they got to give up their check, and they don't want to give up their check. And that's a problem for me. I mean, that's a serious problem for me. So I'm not so quick to run and help anymore. I've been there. I've done that. God bless them. May Allah make a way for them to be able to get back on their feet. But I watch time and time again them manipulate the situation. They don't like rules and regulations. They want to keep their public assistant. They want to come and go. They want you to feed them. They want you to house them. They want you to clothe them. And when you do these things without having them be responsible for assistance that they have to pay something. Have them pay something. Have them be responsible for something, because you're helping them in the long run. And I had to learn that the hard way, that I was helping my brother more so than hindering him. I was hindering him and not helping. I apologize for that. But I was hindering him and not really helping him. And the only way that I was able to help him was to take away all those crutches. You know, we create a lot of crutches for these people. And I was always taught by a brother one time, always be willing to help somebody. Go down to help them. But don't go too low where you fall in. If you fall in, you're done. They're still going to be the same, but you won't. And that's the reason why I produced this podcast to talk about that situation. We have a very serious situation in Newark. And I refuse to go and contribute because some of those guys still getting high. Why would you feed them? And when the city, they blame it on the city. The city try to help these guys get a place to stay. They stay there and then they leave. And then they come back to the park where they got free food, free help, free clothing. And they get to keep their money and do their thing. So I'm not falling for that. I'm not falling for the banana in the tailpipe. If you want help, if you really want to help yourself, you really will help yourself. You can't say that it's not things out here. Let me tell you something. I worked all my life. I fight. I got my pension, but I had to fight to get my SSI, and I've been paying Social Security since I was 16 years old. Even the representative told me, you have so much money accumulated in Social Security, there is no way you should be appealing over and over and over and over again to get what money that's in there for you when people never worked a day in their life and get it with no problem. It's sad. It's just sad. I don't know everything. It's just one man's opinion. That's just my opinion on the situation. I refuse to be so quick to help people. Are I'm helping them or are I'm hindering them? And that's what this podcast is all about.